Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yaffe in Washington. Ahead, considering the strategies to fighting ISIS.
There is a need to tackle the real issue behind people joining ISIS, which is the socioeconomic and political situation in the airport.
A banking issue possibly hurting the flow of ice cream. You won't believe what they think. Swiss cheese is losing its holes. What's trending on the web? And a boy bander goes it out on his own. It's all ahead for you, coming up right here on The Voice of America. U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken attended a Paris multilateral ministerial meeting this week on strategy to fight Islamic State. He said the coalition has made real gains in Iraq, but he acknowledged setbacks on the battlefield. The talks in Paris came 2 weeks after the Islamic State seized Ramadi, the Anbar province capital, 125 kilometers west of Baghdad. Blinken focused the conversation on Iraq while also briefly mentioning the need for political stability in Syria, the second front of the anti-IS campaign. He said that the correct strategy is underway there, a combination of coalition airstrikes and training, equipping, and assisting local partners. VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawy is looking into the issue and has found a different opinion. Mohamed.
Susan, I spoke with Khalil Anani, professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University, and he strongly disagrees with the Blinken assessment and calls for more focus on the socioeconomic and political reasons behind the rise of ISIS.
I think one of the main mistakes of the West, particularly the United States, is the declaration of authoritarianism in the region and the acceptance of repressive governments. I think the West should not recognize these governments, particularly in Egypt. So stability cannot be achieved without giving people their rights, without opening the public sphere, a public space for people to express their views and their ideas. The second is the tackling the economic issue. And here, there are many ways that the West can play. The first one is try to help the local governments to distribute the economic wealth among people, to prevent economic grievances among the poor. Second, to encourage the financial institutions to give assistance and to increase its grants packages to these countries. Third, to make sure that these grants and these money would be distributed fairly among people.
So Professor Anani argues that focusing on the military aspect is not the right approach to weaken and eventually destroy ISIS?
Yes. He acknowledged the need to militarily constrain the expansion of this phenomenon, but he said to cure a wound, you don't just clean it, but you have to deal with the causes as well. So he thinks that there is a serious political component to the rise of the Islamic State.
Many of young Arabs, they lost faith in democracy and they lost hope in the future. That's why ISIS can capitalize in this kind of despair and disappointment and try to recruit as many as Arabs as can. Here I'm talking about the inability of the current regimes to include the opposition, particularly the moderate Islamic opposition such as the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Egypt is a very visible example here when it comes to the rise and the emergence of radical ideas. Since the July 3rd coup of 2013, many young Islamists adopted radical ideas, and they would prefer to join extremist movements more than joining the political process because they lost faith in democracy and ballot box. So I think the exclusion and marginalization of moderate voices would absolutely lead to the emergence of radical and extremist voices.
Some Arab leaders called for a moderate religious discourse to roll back extremists, but some analysts cited economic inequality as a contributing factor. Where does Professor Anani stand?
He strongly believes that there should be a comprehensive approach to combine military, political, and economic aspects in the war against the extremist Islamists calling themselves the Islamic State.
Well, I think it's very important to tackle the economic issue, particularly when it comes to unemployment, poverty, and the inequality between the rich and the poor. For instance, Egypt, about 40% of Egyptian population is living under poverty line, without good health infrastructure or education institutions. So to deal with ISIS, there are two ways. One of them is, of course, using security tool against it, trying to counterbalance with them by using force. At the same time, there's a need to tackle the real issue behind people joining ISIS, which is the socioeconomic and political situation in the Arab world.
That was Khalil Anani, professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University.
Well, thanks, Mohammed, for sharing that insight.
Thank you very much.
Deputy Secretary of State Blinken made some more claims today of military success against the Islamic State. Michael Lippin joins me now here in the studio for more on that and what our audience is saying about it. Michael.
That's right, Susan. France's Interradio broadcast an interview with Blinken today. In that interview, the senior U.S. diplomat said the U.S.-led coalition battling the Islamic State has killed at least 10,000 of the group's fighters since the coalition airstrikes began last August. We have more details on that in the main story on our website, voanews.com. At the bottom of the article, we've also had comments coming in from our readers. One of them, by the name of Willie Webb from the U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona, argues that the Islamic State won't necessarily be deterred by losing so many fighters. Willie Webb writes, "The Islamic State has thousands of toilet cleaners, sex slaves, and cooks, but also 10,000 fewer fighters than they otherwise would have. Unacceptable losses for anyone, except for the Islamic psychotic murderers," as he calls them. Well, if you go to the Voice of America Facebook page, you can also find a short TV report about Blinken's meeting with Iraqi and French officials in Paris yesterday. Just below the video, one of our Turkish readers, Timusin Konuksever, had a comment about Iraq's appeal for more training and equipment to fight the Islamic State militants. Timusin Konuksever says, "That help was needed yesterday before the militants jump into Europe." Susan?
Okay, well, thank you, Michael. That's reporter Michael Lippin. You're tuned to VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. A popular scientific theory suggests that modern humans originated in Africa, but a number of them left some 60,000 years ago and migrated to areas throughout the world. Scientists theorize that humans migrating out of Africa took two possible paths, a southern and a northern route. The southern route took humans out of Africa through Ethiopia, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and the Arabian Peninsula. The northern route suggests that humans exited Africa through the area that is now known as Egypt. Scientists from the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute and the University of Cambridge recently conducted a genetic analysis that suggests modern human populations most likely used the northern route and left Africa through Egypt. Details of the researchers' findings have been published in the American Journal of Human Genetics. And that's your Science in a Minute.
A U.S. government agency whose mission is to boost U.S. exports and jobs has become so controversial, it could go out of business at the end of June unless Congress takes action. The Export-Import Bank is supposed to help foreign companies buy U.S. exports by providing financing, insurance, or technical assistance. But conservative Republicans say EXIM is doing more harm than good. VOA's Jim Randall is covering the story for us and joins us here in the studio. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. How about you?
Magnificent.
Well, tell me about this Export-Import Bank.
Well, the conservatives have a problem with it because they think it's interfering in the market. It's picking economic winners and losers. The market should do that, not the government, in their view. Supporters, and there are quite a few in the business community, which are normally Republican allies, say, look, it's helping exports in other countries. Dozens or scores of other countries have similar agencies, and if we don't have one, it will hurt our exports. And they also complain, the critics say, this thing helps huge companies like Boeing and doesn't do much for small business.
And you have an interesting example, and that's this ice cream parlor you visited.
Well, it's a wonderful ice cream place that's been in business for 154 years. They make all kinds of flavors, and it's uber super premium ice cream that mm-hmm. you could probably get fat just reading the label. it's quite good, and they've been selling it in this one market which is packed, and they have all kinds of flavors. I interviewed one customer who's been a customer since 1934 or something, and she's 89, and she was enjoying the same flavors that she's been eating for quite a while, and she likes it. And we went to the place where they make the ice cream, which is this incredibly complex thing. And they export a fifth of their production to China, something that that Michael Strange, who's the president of the company, said it would be very difficult, maybe impossible, without help from the bank. The bank sells them a kind of insurance. The insurance, in case a foreign customer couldn't pay. Well, that hasn't happened yet. They're doing fine. But if they were to not be paid for a major foreign order, that could put the company at risk. And he's not going to do that. He's the fifth generation of the Bassett family to run this company. He says, this thing's not going under on my watch. So the insurance reassures him, makes him able to do this.
Well, what is Congress going to do about
it? Don't know. Don't know. It's an open question. There was a committee hearing yesterday on the Senate side. There's a committee hearing today on the House side. There's a committee hearing tomorrow on the Senate side. And there's all kinds of lobbying going on in the background. And it's difficult to tell. I mean, it seems like with most of the business community behind the bank, it should have a good chance. But it's Congress. Anything could happen.
Well, thanks, Jim, for stopping by. But next time, bring us a little bit of that ice cream, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Jim.
My pleasure.
Coming up on International Edition, what you don't want to know about Swiss cheese. Yikes! Celebrity facts on Action Reaction. And Nathan Sykes, Go Solo. If you're a connoisseur of Swiss cheese, you might have noticed that over the past few years, the trademark holes in the cheese have been either getting smaller or disappearing altogether. Who knows? Well, some research from the United States over the past few years indicated that the disappearance of the Swiss cheese holes was due to carbon dioxide. But scientists in Switzerland had their doubts about that. VOA's Ira Melman, who always gets these big, heavy stories, decided to investigate and got in touch with Daniel Weckler in Bern, Switzerland. Weckler heads the research group on cheese quality at the Swiss Agroscope Institute for Food Science. Now, who would have thought there would be a cheese quality guy in the world? Anyway, Ira joins me. So, Ira, what did you find out?
Well, Susan, if you go to Switzerland, you know there's going to be an expert, at least one, on Swiss cheese.
I guess so.
There are plenty of them, but this is the number one guy, as I understand it. And he says that the culprit, are you ready for this?
Uh-huh.
Is clean milk.
Ooh.
Yeah. Weckler says the latest investigation found that the holes in the cheese were there because of bits of hay that had been falling into the buckets used by Swiss farmers to milk the cows before that milk was made into cheese.
That's disgusting.
Dirt is good. Now, modern farming procedures, as you might imagine, has made the milk sanitary. No bits of hay. Smaller. Or even no holes in the cheese.
Oh, no.
Here's what Herr Weckler had to say.
We have small microbubbles in these hay particles. And if these particles come into the milk, these microbubbles, they stay in the milk and they are still present in the cheese. And it's just like a chill starts to blow up a balloon. Then it's always very difficult at the beginning to blow up the balloon. And once it's opened, it's easier to push more air inside it. And it's more or less the same principle also in afformation in cheese. So if you have these micro bubbles in the cheese, then it's possible to have the formation of holes. And if they are missing, then you have cheeses that are completely blind there are lacking of these holes. For me, the appearance of such cheese is not very nice, so I prefer to have nice cheeses with holes inside it.
So how do you go about fixing the situation? They're not going to go back to having these particles in the milk, are they? You're going to plate, or are you going, or are you suggesting that that the farmers place such particles in the milk again?
I would say it's not the farmers, but of course on the level of the manufacturer, there is really a target conflict nowadays between hygiene and the lack of these particles. And so I would say it's really a good possibility to have a very hygiene milk, good milk quality, and despite of using very hygiene conditions, to have still a nice opening in the cheese by adding some particles. And if you look at the quantity, if you work with 10 tons of milk, you need about 50 milligram of hay dust. And so this is a very natural way of allowing the formation of holes in the cheese. And this is not an additive, just like an E number or something like that.
So how do you view the future of Swiss cheese?
Oh, they will be all the time the same nice quality as ever. So I don't worry about the quality of Swiss cheese. We have a really high quality of our products. And, of course, they are still made from raw milk. And therefore, the milk quality is one of the most important things you have to consider. And So I don't absolutely not worry that we will not manage to have high-quality cheese rolls in the future.
But will there be holes?
Of course.
Well, Susan, even if they have to put some hay back into the ultra-clean milk, let them do it.
Oh,
I don't
no.
want Swiss cheese without holes in it.
Have you ever seen the hay in barns where cows are? It's just not sanitary.
Do you like Swiss cheese without holes?
I'll punch my own holes. Thank you. Oh. Thanks, Ira.
Thanks, Susan.
This is VOA.
Trending on the web, it's action, reaction.
Get ready. Time to blow your mind with a few celebrity facts. We begin with James Franco. Before hitting the big time, he was flipping Big Macs at McDonald's. So when he countered with, "Would you like some fries with that?" was he just mastering his craft? Christopher Nolan does not have a cell phone. Apparently, he only needs a bat phone. The Queen of England does not have a passport. Why? Because all passports are given in the Queen's name, so she doesn't need one. I guess they just stamp her crown through customs. Here's something you never knew. The King of Rock and Roll hid things behind his crown. That's right, Elvis Presley was a natural blonde. Rumor has it that he used one tube of hair dye for the top of his head, 10 tubes for his sideburns.
Using that greasy kid stuff, too. just like it.
For VOA's Action Reaction, I'm Lisa Bora.
Singer Nathan Sykes gained international fame with the boy band The Wanted. Last year, the band members decided to take a break. But as VOA's David Byrd tells us, Sykes has a new solo project, and the first single comes out this month.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's a look at what's happening in music. Last year, when the British boy band The Wanted announced that they were taking a break, singer Nathan Sykes was only 20 years old. But his passion for music didn't go away because he and his bandmates wanted a change. Sykes is launching his solo career with a new album, and the first single, Kiss Me Quick, comes out this month. The 22-year-old Gloucester, England native says that he could not imagine his life without music, so going solo was a natural next step.
I was 20 at the time when we decided it, and I was like, I'm far too young to stop doing what I love. And for anyone who's like, oh my God, he's left the band, he's like, well, what do you expect me to do with my life? Sit in a dark room for the next 10 years and wait for a phone call to say, oh, we're going to do another tour? It's like, what do you expect me to do? Do you know what I mean? So I was like, I love music so much, and I can't imagine my life without music. So I just went and made a solo record.
Sykes says that fans can look for his new album to be a departure from some of the Wanted's hits like Glad You Came or Chasing the Sun.
It's like soulful pop. And there's like a nice, healthy balance between fun, lighthearted, kind of flirty, upbeat, like kind of horn-influenced tracks. And that kind of contrasts well with the deeper kind of like soul of the album.
For the new album, Nathan Sykes worked with producers and songwriters Harmony Samuels, Babyface, and Diane Warren to craft his sound. Nathan Sykes says that even his former bandmates in The Wanted liked the new sound, though they weren't above giving him a little ribbing about it.
They were like, wow, this is like a lot better than I thought it would be. I was like, that's a backhanded compliment. But I was like, what, did you not think I was capable of that? They were like, no, if I'm honest. I was like, oh, great, cheers, guys. But yeah, they're pleasantly surprised.
The full album is scheduled for release in the autumn in the UK and North America. And Nathan Sykes said he is always open to doing another album with The Wanted should his bandmates decide they want to.
Obviously, I'm so focused on this at the moment and excited by it. But of course, the door's always open to doing something in the future, maybe with the boys.
For VOA's International Edition, I'm David Byrd.
Take it down for me, baby. Take it down for me, baby. Take it down for me, baby. Baby. Get it up.
Get it up for me, baby. Get it up for me, baby. Get it up for me, baby.
Sing.
If you'd like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner and then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government's Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, Chief Executive Officer Dana Hyde and Deputy Vice President Fatima Sumar met with Mongolian leaders to discuss development of the country's new compact and impacts and sustainability from the country's first compact. The discussions focused on MCC's approach to reduce poverty through economic growth, the Mongolian government's leadership role in developing a second compact, and the constraints analysis, a key foundation of compact development. The MCC delegation also congratulated the Mongolian government on the 25th anniversary of its democratic transition and reaffirmed the strong relationship between the United States and Mongolia. Both Mongolia and the United States agreed that the anniversary marks an occasion for continued cooperation between the two countries, as well as MCC's commitment to helping Mongolia consolidate its democratic transition by supporting its economic development. Throughout their week-long visit to Mongolia, the delegation visited projects from the first compact, including the Salkit Wind Farms, a vocational school in Qair, peri-urban rangeland areas in Tuv Amag, the Qair Sainshand Road, and Hospital No. 3. They met with local government officials in Gobisamber and Umnagobi Amags and a wide range of civil society representatives, including women leaders. The delegation concluded its visit with a visit to Ulaanbaatar's Gur district and meeting with the mayor. In December 2014, the MCC Board of Directors selected Mongolia for the development of a second compact. Currently, MCC and Mongolian officials are conducting an analysis of the country's economy and constraints to growth. The Millennium Challenge Corporation is proud to work with Mongolia to sustain the gains it has made towards economic empowerment for all the people of Mongolia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.